Hey, Clumatics, Kurt Graves here again. This is A Love Song, the podcast, and we are going to be hearing very shortly from the wonderful, the talented, the hardworking Michael Leslie. And I think you'll understand what I mean when I say hardworking once you've listened to this interview. I had a great time talking to Michael about all of the extra effort that he puts into his audiobooks, specifically the Tales of Verania series, in which he has started using effects and soundscapes, and it's just incredible. If you haven't listened, and I genuinely don't know if that's even possible, if you're listening to this podcast, that you haven't heard any of those stories, but if you haven't, you must go pick up a copy right away. Here's my conversation with Michael Leslie. I don't know that anybody who is listening to this or finds this online would need like a formal introduction to Michael Leslie, but just in case they do, you are the audiobook narrator for T.J. Klune's At First Sight series and Tales from Verania series.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I see on Audible you have about a dozen other titles under that same name.
Yeah.
And like, what else should we know about you?
I am a multitude. I don't know. I kind of got into audiobook narration as a fluke and sort of hit a breach of success with Tell Me It's Real, which is the first book in At First Sight series. It's not, audiobook narration isn't the only line of work that I do. Yeah, I'm a carpenter also by trade. And
really?
Yeah. And I also do a lot of stuff. Well, less now than when I started doing narration a few years ago. But I was kind of involved with a local, I don't want to say community theater because that is a taboo term. But very much community theater organization.
I love community theater.
It's kind of evolved or disbanded, and I'm looking for my separate place in that that capacity right now. Like, I'm still writing a lot of plays and trying to figure out how I can branch the work that I'm doing on books like specifically the Verania books. Because there's a lot of, I'm trying to do a lot of things in those books that are atypical of the expectation of an audiobook narrator, just like things like sound effects and a lot of commitment to voices that, as far as I can tell, it's like, well, especially with sound effects, it's a big one that's like, generally a big no in narration, but
certainly for independent narrators. My husband, who's a huge Star Wars fan, would tell you like all audiobooks have crazy sound effects in them.
Ooh, that's interesting. I've never heard the Star, like, so that's extended. Let's derail for a minute.
Sure, absolutely.
That's extended universe Star Wars, and there's like audiobook kind of like radio plays for extended universe stuff.
Well, it's a single narrator. But the book throughout has, like, you will hear the pew-pew-pew of the starship gun thingy. Oh, God, he's going to kill me when he listens to this, that I don't know what those are called.
I don't know.
As ships pass over you, you hear the whooshing, and as they walk down the hallway, you'll hear, like, the computer sound effects. And it's like a full audio production with one narrator. So it's not a full play, but it is the audiobook narrator, and there it's chock full of sound effects.
See, that's really cool.
But for like an independent narrator like you to be doing that, it is something very special. It is unique. I don't know a lot of other people out there doing it.
No, I mean, it makes it a lot more difficult and a lot more time consuming, to be honest. Like, so I've really only put a mass amount of sound effects. Like, I tried some in the second Verania book, and then in the third and fourth, I have put in quite a bit as like sort of an experiment to see how well it plays. And for the most part with the third book, I got a pretty positive response. The fourth book's not out yet. But I it's hard because like when you're making it, you know, it, you don't know how well it really tests. And I don't have like a beta reader. I don't hire anyone to do proofing. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like really important for me to listen back to the book and in order to make clarifying changes that I think need to be made. And I'm not sure that I could outsource that. I mean, yeah, I've never done it before.
I was going to actually ask you about that. I've listened to the first two audiobooks of the Verania series. I'm on chapter 5 of Consumption of Magic right now.
Cool.
Yeah. And what struck me, even in the first book, as something that was really different that you do is you seem to extrapolate things that are often narrated but not vocalized, like laughter, sighing, stuff that, you know. So, I mean, that to me was one of the first things I noticed is like, look at this guy. He's like, he's doing it. He's doing it for real. and then like in the book two, you started talking about the sound effects that were there. And I was like, hold up, what's happening? And like, as I'm listening to like the first chapter of book two, I'm like, hold up. Is that wind?
Oh, yeah.
Is that trees?
Yeah, I made all that wind voice with like my nostrils.
Well, for a second, I was like, what's wrong with the audio?
Like, yeah.
Because you're so not used to hearing it in an audio book.
100%. Yeah. I think that was intentional because I wanted that to be an introduction to like the acknowledgement that there would be sound effects in the series from that point. Like that dream sequence mm-hmm. was like, so when I was reading it, I was like, oh, this could be so surreal. And I just had like the regular narration and I was like, it's not as compelling as I think it should be, but I think that it could be a lot more powerful. And so actually the idea to put sound effects in the book came from the production that went into that specific scene in chapter 2 of book mm-hmm. 2. It just seemed like it could be so much bigger. And so I really wanted it to make it that way.
Were you nervous about that at all?
Yes, very. Book two, I finished right before GRL last year, and it was released after GRL. And so the whole time at GRL, people were really excited about it and like talking about it, and people liked the reading that I did from book two. But book two is like a major tone change mm-hmm. as far as the series goes. And yeah, I added stuff like that and a lot of stuff changed. Like a lot of the voices, in the subsequent series, like books 2 through 4 are a lot darker because mm-hmm. the tone of the book's darker. So the voices are deeper and more sinister and the plot is like a little bit more grave. So I was just nervous that it wasn't going to be received as well. But I've been really, really happy with how it has been received.
Yeah. What was the process of like deciding to move forward with sound effects? Did you have to talk to Dream Spinner or were you like, I'm just going to throw this in and see what happens?
I talked to Dream Spinner, but it was very terse. Like I was just like, hey, is it cool if I do this? And they were like, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it was more just like the gamble of doing it. And then like, you know, getting permission from, I made virtually, I don't know, like 1/5 of the sound effects myself. I'm making more now. I got a better mic for doing it. But so it's like getting in touch with like the creators of the sound effects and crediting them. I just wanted to make sure I had that right. And that's actually a really cool program. I mean, like you can use sound effects from Freesound. Some of them are public domain. Some of them are Creative Commons, so you just have to give credit where credit's due. Mm-hmm. And I really like the community. Like, there's people from all over the world just going out with microphones and recording things, and then you can use them and manipulate them. And
it's like stock photography.
Yes, very much so with audio. And I'm very fascinated by that. The idea of taking those random bits of other people's collections and making them into a sound collage. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It works. It kind of works with the audiobook stuff. It seems like it has so far. But I wonder if it would work in other series or what else I could do with it. I'm sort of trying to figure out like where to branch off and to make something else, you know, because I do want to make something like a radio play. I'm not exactly sure, but there's like thoughts floating in my head.
Sure. So, okay. Like, how much time does that take? Because, I can't imagine how much extra time that is on top of, especially if you're doing your own proofing, your own editing, your own mastering. Even some of your character voices have effects applied. And then you're adding sound effects and, like, audioscapes as part of the book.
Yeah.
Are you getting good enough that, like, this will make sense economically at some point? Or will it always be that special extra Michael Leslie touch?
I don't think it'll always make sense to do this. It does add a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm.
For TJ's books, it was a gamble that I wanted to try. Like, in book two, I didn't use as much. I probably added another, like, 20 hours to my production by adding stuff like sound effects and soundscapes.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of, like, it worked, and I felt like it was worth the time. So I added more for book three, and that probably added, like, another 40 to 60 hours. I actually keep a pretty detailed spreadsheet. And the same thing with book four. I don't know. I could look at it. I go back, and if things do not work for me, then I will change them. And I use Reaper as my DAW. And Reaper gives the ability to color code waves.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually color code characters that I'm unsure of, and I will figure out who I'm unsure of during editing.
Okay.
And that makes it a lot easier to go back through and figure out, like, I don't like the way that I did this voice. Or, for instance, in this last book, The Great White Dragon, I was recording his voice without a pop filter because it sounded, like, bigger. Okay. But I didn't realize that it was, like, clipping the whole time. So I had to go back and, like, re-record every single line of this dragon. And
holy
it was
shit.
Way more time consuming than I thought it would be. It took me, like, 5 hours.
Holy shit. That sucks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's not that big of a deal just because it's, like, TJ's books do really well. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not worried about, like, losing money because I'm losing time. To me, the most important thing is that the product that I'm putting out is really, really good. And so if there's something that, like, I've learned this early on, that if there's a hang up in the production at all, that's what people are going to focus on with their reviews. And if, like, the reviews are about something that doesn't work in production, then you just sort of shot the book in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it might be tougher with, like, other authors who maybe don't sell as well to commit so much time to the book. I haven't really hit that road yet. I'm going to start opening myself up to new contracts soon. But for the time being, it's like I am a perfectionist, and this series has allowed me to cater towards that perfectionism, which is, like, it's satisfying, I don't know, a compulsive behavior in me. But I do feel like feel a lot more satisfied if I can listen to it and not hear, like, poorly edited, you know, like it, as long as, like, you know, parts where I've cut crossfade well and they don't sound like clippy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is getting too, like, wonky.
Well, I was going to say what I appreciate about the fact that this conversation took this detour so quickly is that I don't think 99% of the people who love your work understand how much work goes into it, because you make it sound effortless. Like, it really sounds effortless. But I'm sitting there listening and constantly thinking, holy crap. Why?
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe he just did that. Because it's a choice, and it's an artistic choice that's perfect. But also, there's no artistic choice that you can make that doesn't add work when you're talking about adding sound effects and effects to character voices. So, you know, it's one of the things that after I did Wolfsong and I started to get a grip on who TJ was and how big and popular he was, that once I listened to The Lightning Struck Heart, I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, he might actually be a really big deal because listen to what this dude's doing.
Oh, so, wow. That's cool to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a lot of work. I'm coming off of just finishing book four, and he really goes out of his way to create new arbitrary characters. I think as a challenge of my, I mean, I'm biased in this way where I just think everything is personal, but I do think that a lot of the things that he did in this book were like a challenge to like what I would do. And I sort of did it all. Like there's all this, like you have these like characters that have been through books one and three, but then their voices get manipulated. So I'm having to perform the same voice, but a little bit manipulated. Mm-hmm. And then there's like 30 or 40, just like arbitrary dark wizard characters that I think it's really funny if they all have distinct personalities.
Right.
And so I've really, really put in a lot of effort to giving them all distinct personalities, because when I listen back to it, I just find it very funny. But yeah, I mean, it is a lot of work, and I don't know. I think that I don't think I would do it if people didn't appreciate it. So, or maybe I would. I don't know. I'm glad that
they certainly do
hear it and see it. That's really cool. I mean, I don't know.
I think any audiobook narrator who listened to what you do would appreciate how much work goes into it. But again, how effortless it sounds on the back end. So I'm glad we talked about it, because I hope people get some idea of the amount of effort and time that you put in into something that that a lot of people love.
Sure.
So that's awesome. Okay, we jumped way ahead. Let's back up a little bit. So tell me more about like Michael Leslie as like a child growing up. Like, what's your story? Where'd you come from?
Well, I was raised in Texas, deep in the heart, the left ventricle. You know something that I just found out about myself? Do you know the Myers-Briggs test?
Mm-hmm.
I have always viewed Myers-Briggs as like science astrology, and I'm like, I'm not going to buy into that bullshit. But, recently I really don't know what inspired me, but I took the test and like, I have been really, really responding to the result, which is I am an ENFP.
Okay.
Oh, fuck. I don't even know. It's like extroverted, intuitive, feeling, perceptive. I don't know what the P stands for.
Yeah.
But there's this quality to it where it's just like I am way out front with being sociable and being like sort of someone who brings an energy to a party or a party of people. Mm-hmm. But at the same time also holds back a lot with like sharing too much or like being too trusting or personable. And there's like, you know, there's an element of me that feels a lot, but also does like sort of withholding. And I mean, it's just a trait that's really, I buy into it now. I'm like full 100% science astrologer. And that's like who I've been like my whole life. Like I was class clown 3-4 years running. you know, I like performing. I like turning a situation, like changing the vibe of a party. I like making games up, or like, you know, if I'm on a long drive with people to like start provocative conversations. I'm a big fan of 20 questions, you know, that kind of bullshit. But I don't know.
I can never remember my Myers-Briggs. I did it once on a long car ride with a friend. Like she asked me the questions and like typed in the answers. And ever since I always have to text her when I want my four letters. Cause I was like, remind me what I was again. Cause I have no idea. That's the type of information my brain does not retain well.
I'm sure that your Myers-Briggs, would predict that behavior of not remembering your Myers-Briggs.
In some way, shape, or form. Yeah.
I would guess.
In growing up, see, you were the class clown. You liked performing. Were you involved in like theater as a kid? Was there a theater where you grew up?
I was a theater kid, but I wasn't like a huge actor in high school. I just like gravitated towards the theater kids because they were the oddballs. And really, I found a home there. I always considered myself a writer, though, and would write a lot of plays. I wrote a lot of plays in my teens, actually. And these are strange plays. I wrote this play called Corn Pops. I don't remember why it was called Corn Pops, but it was about this store where everything gets stolen and replaced with IOUs. And then it's like a day in the life of these two employees who are like dealing with all of these crazy customers coming in and out.
Huh.
And I wrote this this weird heist play that was like a parody of Sex and the City. I don't remember actually the plot of it. Maybe this doesn't like bear.
I find this very insightful. I'm learning a lot.
Okay, that's good. Make a long story short, I was doing a lot of writing back then. Grew up in Texas, but my parents were from from Philly and Chicago. Pretty much most of my family, even though a lot of family members, extended family members too, were living in Texas. They'd moved down there in like the 60s. Most people, although I still have family members down there, have like spread out kind of all over the country at this point. Major diaspora. And so I'm in Western Pennsylvania now, which I like a lot, mostly because Texas is so flat and so big. And I really like hills and I really like history. So I have just like fallen in love with this place because it's so, I'm in Pittsburgh. It's really old and there's just so much strange history and so many different kinds of people from really all over the world, because this was like a boom town for industry. And so just a lot of people had like settled here, mostly from Eastern Europe, but there are people like pretty international from different continents as well.
And, what brought you to Pittsburgh?
School. I went to University of Pittsburgh.
Oh.
I just kind of fell in love with it.
Studying?
Well, I came here to study urban studies. I don't know exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't realize that urban studies was just urban planning, which is not what I wanted to do. I was more interested in just like the archaeology of cities. I've always been a really, really big fan of how cities operate. And still am. It's like something that I really like is seeing like the inner nerves of a city. I really like the bureaucracies, and I do like city planning, but as like an investigation. I don't like the idea of carrying it out, mostly because city planning projects tend to be like a disaster and like not cater towards people that they're intending to help. So, but it's just really fascinating to me. I think that there's a lot of good dramas that happen within the extent of like how government plays with like utilities and plays with the people that are living in both the inner and outer cities. And so I really like those stories. You know, there's like, you know, the best screenplay is Chinatown and the best television show that was ever created was The Wire. And it's like, these to me are stories about how cities work and how the corruption in a city works and how like the mechanics of that bureaucracy can be played with and how individuals sort of like are the characters that populate the narrative. And so based on, you know, the idea of playing these characters or seeing how these characters think or just like looking at these characters, I think it's just really, really fascinating to see how they operate in this mechanism that's twirling around them and is usually bigger than any one person can actually like operate themselves. So that investigation is really fascinating to me.
Explains a lot about the gift you have for a really like diverse cast of people in a book. If you're interested by how all these things are connected, and then
sure.
That I guess since we're back to talking about stories, like, how did you first end up working with TJ?
I got super lucky because, I mean, back in, so the first project that I did with TJ was Tell Me It's Real. And back in that day, like, I had a really, really cheap compressor mic. I had a Blue Snowball. And I was, like, doing editing. Like, my software was Rock Band. So that's, like, the bare bones. Like, you can't really use Rock Band. But I did it. I sent in, that was with ACX, which is, the Audible has a subsidiary called Audiobook Creation Exchange. I mean, you know this, but I'm just for the sake of. Audible has a subsidiary, Audiobook Creation Exchange, and the publishers and self-published authors put up their contracts, and freelance narrators can then audition for these contracts. And so they used to have this really cool deal, which was a stipend program, which would pay $100 per finished hour, and on top of that, you got royalties on the book. So it's a really great deal. So I know, like, hundreds of narrators would audition for these stipend contracts. And I put in an audition for Tell Me It's Real because it was just such a bizarre writing style. Like, the first line of that book is, like, I don't have a gargantuan penis. And I mean, I did the full audition, but I, like, was really dissatisfied with my first run of it. And it was, like, this weird thing where usually at that time I would, like, just put out blanket auditions, like, just do a one run, and then just, like, you know, put it out into the ether and then let it go. But I kept on thinking about the text of that first chapter and how, like, at one point it just sort of snapped. Like, I didn't have the voice of Paul at first. I had some other voice. And then the voice came to me and I was like, oh shit, that's how I should record that. And so it was like, I think the first time I ever went back, re-recorded an audition and resubmitted it. And then in this crazy, like, it was like 3 or 4 weeks later, I got an email from Dreamspinner saying, like, are you still interested?
Uh-huh.
And, like, at that point too, I had, like, talked to people about the book, and, like, in my friend group, I was like, we were referring to it as the gargantuan penis book. And it was just like this really weird thing. I was just like, oh, should I do this gargantuan penis book? And I think I was with my friend Ben, who was just like, yeah, of course you should do this book. And it was awesome. Like, what a fun book. I didn't even realize how fun it would be when I first started it. And, you know, God bless people for putting up with the shitty material that I recorded it on. Because it is kind of rough, and like, it was my first big book, and so I feel like that was I don't know, that was like a strange, it was a strange, like, what's it called? Not the opposite of delivery, arrival, whatever, into the sphere of, like, doing, I don't know, audiobooks professionally. And and I was like, I read reviews, and I was pretty, I liked the reviews. Like, it was like, it was received really, really well. With another funny story resulting from that is, like, years later, when Lightning Struck Heart came out, I saw the audition pretty late when it was on Audible. And I, like, submitted an audition because I was, like, doing construction work at the time. I was, like, in a down moment, and looking at my phone, and I was like, oh shit, this, like, TJ Klune book. It's like, there's another TJ Klune book. So I started reading it, and I was like, oh fuck, like, I want to do this book so badly.
And again, probably thousands of other people did too.
Yeah.
Because,
I think so.
I mean, I was talking to Derek earlier this week, and he auditioned for it and was saying the same thing. Like,
yeah.
Probably, yeah. Everybody wanted this book.
I know, yeah, Derek, Greg, and Joel all auditioned for that book as well. Yeah, I don't know. I got it on a fluke. What happened was, I, like, sent in an audition. Our auditions are only supposed to be 5 minutes long. I got carried away, and I ended up sending in this, like, 12-minute audition. But the same day, I got an email from Andrew at Dreamspinner saying, like, TJ asked if you would submit an audition for this book. And I was like, oh, what a coinkydink. I just did. Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. And I'm just really glad that they liked what I did with it. Because it has been such a fucking wild ride doing this whole book or the whole series.
Yeah.
So I track that up to, I don't know if it's a coincidence, but I'm really glad that the stars aligned so that I could, like, they asked me to do it. And at the same time, I already had put in my audition and they were like, okay, this is satisfactory.
It's perfect. That's awesome. Yeah. So you started with the At First Sight series, which I have to admit, and people are going to get mad at me, I don't know a ton about. Like, I've tried to consume as much TJ Klune stuff as I can. But I can't get to all of it. What was your experience like with that series? Which, there's one more book coming out in that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There's a book coming out next spring or winter. It's coming out within the next year.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure when it's release date. My experience with it. Well, I feel like, unlike the Verania series, the tone has remained pretty consistent with that book. What's been cool about it is book two was The Queen and the Homo Jock King, where the narrator changes to Sandy, who is, I mean, a different character than Paul. And also, like, timid young male by day and fierce, powerful drag queen by night. And I was a little intimidated to play that part because I didn't know if I could hold a whole book in that performance. But I have friends in Pittsburgh who are drag queens, and I really respect them for the amount of commitment that they have for holding a role and for committing to, like, certain things like movement, like dancing and playing a part. And I really just did everything that I could to get into the real zone of being able to put on the drag of first playing Sandy and then allowing Sandy to put on the drag of playing Helena. And it was a very odd experience, that book in particular, because it was pretty transformative. Like, I felt myself thinking in ways of that Sandy or Helena might think during the day, which is, like, very quick to violence. Not in an actual, like, literal physical violent way, but, like, just the how would you call it? Like, the insinuation of violence. Like, there's a lot of stabbing in that book. She's talking about getting stabby a lot. And it's like, I think that what people sort of let slip under the radar for that character is how it's like closet psychotic the character is, which is, like, I think that TJ allows that with some of his characters, of, like, allowing them to have these sort of, I don't want to say malevolent, but, like, scary traits that don't, like, there's a lot of stuff in TJ's writing that's really in your face. And then there's a lot of subtlety too. And I think that it's so subtle, I don't even know if it's intentional with some of the characters. Like, with Sandy, it clearly is. Because there's, like, this submissive, no, it's not submissive. It's not repressive either. There's this hidden rage, and there's, like, this sort of, like, it's out of a sense of protection, but it's also out of a sense of arrogance that, I don't know. I didn't see it in the first book. I mean, you don't know because you haven't read it, but for the sake of people listening, it's not that apparent in the first book because the first book isn't about her. In the second book, though, it is. And it's like getting under the rafters of that character and saying like what the calm surface of Sandy is to allow the like vibrant, passionate, fierce, like monster of Helena to come out and like just dominate and be such like a sensual goddess. But like goddesses, you know, it's like we think of like Herbal Essences commercials, but like traditionally, like they're manufacturers of war and capable of like devastation and like just like waves of nature. And so I really appreciate the idea of playing something that's like a Old Testament styled goddess that's a drag queen, but like within that human form, like they're not actually, you know, making the waves. But oh man, if TJ did do like a like a what's a good, is it the Iliad, where it's like the Iliad's mostly about the fight to take Troy, the Trojan War. Then there's always these like, there's also these like side chapters where the gods are just sort of arguing with each other. I think if TJ was to write a book like that, that would be amazing. It's like this.
Who knows? It's just like you a bunch may have of, just like, planted the seed.
Oh, I love. I try so hard to plant seeds into TJ's psyche. I'm like putting stuff on the social media all the time, just like, hey, take this, run with it. I want to see what this is like. I don't know if he reads any of it, but boy.
Well, first of all, let me just say that your description of that book has made me want to put it next in my cycle of TJ Klune universe exploring. So I am excited to check that out. But you are somebody who has actually gotten to spend some time with TJ Klune. What is he like in person, in your own words?
How doth one describe? I don't know. Like it was very like I went to JRL last year, and you know this. This line of work is super isolated. I am currently in a box that's like 4 foot by 4 feet and like 5 feet tall, 5.5 feet tall. And I, for the first 3 years that I was working in this industry, I interacted with not a person face to face. So that means that I was corresponding with like Andrew from Dream Spinner and TJ too, only by email. I had never heard his voice. So that's like another aspect of like giving the voice of Paul or Sam. I understand that to be partly TJ, but that was before I knew TJ at all. And I'd seen a couple pictures. You know, you see pictures of someone, I'm like, it's the same thing as like seeing pictures of someone like on a dating profile or Facebook. You think that you sort of have an idea, but then when you meet the person in person, it's just like, you're totally different than my perception of you. TJ was like, it just shocked me when I actually met him and other people too, like Derek and Greg and Joel, and tons of fans and bloggers like Jay. And, I didn't know what to expect meeting them face to face. But what surprises me always when I meet someone who I've mythologized in my mind is like, oh, you're a mortal man. Who whose hand I can shake and whose skin is warm. And TJ just seemed like so reserved, but definitely like in his skin, like he just seems like a wise man. He had a full beard at the time that helps like contribute to an image that I have of his wisdom. And also like he was sort of this like VIP type figure at GRL who was kind of in the background too. Like he led the first panel on the first night with all the narrators. But for the most part, it's like he wasn't necessarily like one of the more frontal figures, at least in my perception, throughout the conference. So he's sort of like this wise man in the shadows. And I really appreciated just how he just seemed to have a lot of command of himself. And I think that it's reflected in like the types of books that he writes. Like, I think that he is maturing as a writer constantly. Like with each subsequent book and each series that I've done with him, the books get better and better. And the character development gets better and better. And I feel like, you know, he's a growing boy. He's really like growing into himself. And you just like, you get that sense when you meet him too. It's like he knows that he has grown and he's got more growing to do. And so when you're talking to him, there is that wisdom, but there's also that amount of curiosity.
Oh, I love that. I won't take up too much of your time. So let's do like maybe more of a lightning round with some questions that might have more concrete answers. In your opinion, what is the best work that you've done and why? In audiobooks, what's the best book you've done?
The best work that I've done. I'd say Lightning was probably what has been the most surprising, because I did that really fast. It had to be done in 40 days, which is like super fast for me, because like, for instance, with Wish Upon the Stars, I've been working on that book since April, which is insane. I also like, you know, for the most part in July and August, I had other things that were like stopping me from working. So I didn't work that much in those 2 months, but still. Lightning, it was the most surprising to me how well it was received and how like people really, really responded to it. But I did it so quickly, I can't even really remember the process of it. But I'll say as an extension of that, this last book that I just did, I know what the series has come to like mean to people and the expectation I feel like of delivering on it. And there's just been a lot of response that I've got for this, you know, the expectation for this book. And so I feel really, really good about A Wish Upon the Stars, which has not yet come out. It's I've put a lot into it, and I'm really committed to like making the characters really well done. And I mean, like, I'm listening back to it now. I'm doing like a proofing, like while Dream Spinner is also doing a proofing. And it's just like, I think it's going to be awesome.
Well, so, good.
Yeah.
That makes me happy to hear. And it also makes me curious as to whether or not the Audible gods will let it be out by the time this podcast is out at GRL.
It needs to come out before GRL. Yeah. It's like, it's so necessary. I think it will be.
Fingers crossed. Audible gods, please let this go through quickly.
We've got a month.
Yes. Which okay. Usually is plenty of time.
I think it should be.
Yeah.
I think it should be.
Yeah. Who are your mentors?
My mentors? It's a great question. Well, the first book that I ever did was with my sister. She's an actress. And that book is not released. Our contract got canceled.
Aww.
Well, it's a funny story. Just the book was really bad. But it was really, really fun. It was like I was living in LA for a little bit of time doing non-entertainment jobs. I got really burnt out with LA. And so I quit all my jobs, was intending to move back to the East Coast. And then she was like, hey, can you help me do this audiobook? And I was like, sure. That's how I actually got introduced to audiobooks. And my sister is, she has such a love of comedy and she has such a love of characters. And so I feel like I got really inspired by her to do characters. And doing this book, which was supposed to be this like kind of like noir detective crime romance. But like it's sort of just about this like misogynistic baby boomer who like he's just like really gruff and narcissistic, but he gets any woman he wants and he sucks. But like, because it was a really serious book that we were performing, like while we were having fun doing it, it was really inspiring to me to like what you can do with character. And I mean, you know, I've learned characters from other people too. Like a huge audiobook influence is, Betty Buckley's version of Buffalo Girls, which is a Larry McMurtry book. And she just completely kills doing these character voices. I was working on a farm in 2011, and all that I had to keep me occupied, like pre-iPod, was like a Walkman. So in like a bookstore in the middle of Maine, I bought this book on tape, and it was just so good. Like, so good listening to this on a fucking Walkman and just, like, walking around the fields, listening to this woman, like, embody these characters in the Wild West. And I really recommend that book to anyone because it was really, really good. And it was inspiring. Yeah.
What is the audiobook, and it can be TJ or any audiobook, that you wish you had narrated?
It's a great question. Before I got this, and I said Hitchhiker's Guide, but I really like the version that exists. It's Stephen Fry does the first one and Martin Freeman does all the rest. And they're both like excellent. Although I like Martin Freeman's, what's the like sort of game show host type character, whatever. It doesn't matter. But I don't want that to be the answer to this question because it's like, what could I have narrated? You know what? Even though Jim Dale is heralded as like, the fucking best. I've only listened to the first Harry Potter. I had a bad road trip experience, and it has stunned me on that series because it's like I'm afraid to continue listening to the series because it might dredge up bad memories. Okay. Nevertheless, I was very into it, and especially his McGonagall is like so good. And I just like for the test of being able to like do that range of characters and the freedom to do such like ridiculous characters. And one of the liberated things about doing a fantasy is that like you can get away with doing accents or leaping into like fantastical creatures because it's like it's another world. So right. I definitely want to take advantage of that. And like, you know, that's like a very free part of fantasy. So let's say Harry Potter.
Awesome. Fuck it. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, but I have to admit I have never listened to the audiobooks.
They are at the best. Like,
yeah,
best
everybody
audiobooks.
Says that, but there's so many other things that I want to consume. And I'm like, I've already read the books. So
I mean,
I'll get to them.
Yeah. They're out there. And I'm saying they're the best. I just told you I've only listened to the first one. But I'm assuming.
Well, it is pretty much industry consensus that they are the best. And they better be with how much money and production I'm sure was put behind them.
Oh, my God.
What is, like, I don't want to be like, what's your five-year plan? But, like, what are your goals? What are you hoping to achieve? Like, where do you see yourself going?
Here's the thing, and I don't know how to really do this. I hate working by myself. I just do not like it. It's not something that I like to do. It's one of the reasons why I've kept up being a carpenter, because I like the team that I work with, and it's really important for me to be social. But I also really like this line of work, and being an artist, and doing voices, and acting. Like these are important values to me, too. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it, but I do want to build a sphere of like collaborative work somehow. And if I can do it somehow, like bridge what I'm doing right now with audiobooks towards working with people collaboratively, I'd feel really good about, I don't know, the next 5 years or whatever. So
that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tend to fall on the introverted spectrum of people who do what we do. I don't like having coworkers, but I do like collaborating with people, which is a strange dynamic. So that
no, I hear that.
You know, like the reason I don't like coworkers is that I set a standard for myself, and I get really frustrated when other people aren't setting the same standard for themselves. But my experience in theater has generally been, you know, you have a director who kind of sets the standard, and then everybody has to live with that and work in that. And like, that's an environment that I like, because then the collaboration is working towards a common goal that like somebody gets to create.
It's just this like weird environment right now where it's like, you know, millennials killing everything, millennials killing Walmart, et cetera. Well, but like millennials kind of are killing theater, But it's like also theater is like killing itself because it's just so expensive. It's so expensive and it's like so much commitment to, even if you charge the right amount for tickets, like you're still breaking your back for almost pennies by doing theater. And it is my passion, but it's like, what do I do with this passion and how do I adapt it to make it like conform to 21st century? And I think there is a way and I'm trying to figure it out and just looking for the right team.
Yeah.
I
wish you luck. And once you figure it out, please let me know.
Oh my God. Yeah. You'll hear me. I'll be tolling a bell like a hunchback, singing it out to the crowds below.
Awesome. Any other projects you're working on that you want to let people know about?
Nothing that I want to let people know about just yet, but maybe I'll have some announcements at GRL.
Fair.
Who knows?
How can people find you?
Well, I'm on Facebook. You just look at my name on Twitter at Mr. Michael Leslie. And, I have a website. It's michaelleslie.com.
Awesome.
I believe. Is that my website?
I'm pretty sure. Again, just Google the name. It will pop up.
Yeah. Just Google my name. Yeah. It is michaelleslie.com. I really need to, I'm going to update this for GRL as well. And I'll be at GRL, which you should know about because that's how you heard about this. Okay.
Correct. All right. Last question. The title of this podcast is Love Song, based on the short story by T.J. Klune. What is a love song from your life that's meaningful to you and why?
All right. So I thought about this question a lot today. And, there's a lot of answers here. The love song that I picked, I like don't think it's appropriate. But it's like You and I by Rick James. It is, there's especially this one, DJ Morales, I think it's like, it's a remix of it. It's just like the most up song. Like you can like fucking just dance the fuck out of too. And it is a love song, you know, it's about just like embracing someone. I just can't think of a more like upbeat, fun song that just has such a good tempo. It's not like how I typically think of a love song, though, which is a little more somber. Doesn't have to be like devastated.
Well, 'cause love is so sad.
It is. I think it's like a very happy song, and it's like it's so lovely, and it's just like, boy, just dancing to that song with someone.
I can't wait to look it up. I'm excited.
It's the best.
All right.
I'm going to love it.
I can't wait. Thank you so much for taking the time. This has been a lot of fun.
Oh, of course. I cannot wait to meet you next month.
It's happening. Thank you so much to Michael Leslie for taking the time to chat with me. I hope you loved it as much as I did, and I hope you're loving this song as much as I do now. So thank you, Michael, both for the interview and for that recommendation. Okay, Clunatics, next up in your podcast feed should be my interview with Greg Tremblay. Of course, that's the next thing you're going to listen to. Why would you even think about stopping now? I hope you guys enjoy it. I'm Kurt Graves. This is Love Song, the podcast.